Oh, it's already
coming. Let's call it working group to order. And we have a forum for the working group. So with that, we'll start on our agenda. Working group, we have Representative Hodge, Representative Mahoney, myself, Chairman, Representative Locovina. We also have Peterson.
He's in the building. I think he's coming.
Okay, so with that, we'll start with our agenda. Scott Lazoo, welcome to our working group. Would you like to come?
Pretty tough for a ranger. I'm sure you've done it. I just want to thank everybody for taking their time and taking them to the working group to provide me with the materials for you. I thank you additionally for the continued effort in helping the Boxing Commission and the successful I am confident that it can be and that the participants in the sport we regulate need to be. I began with the dream of reestablishing the commission after the sunset in 2001. Boxing's popularity had declined over the years and was just beginning to make a recovery. My dream was to give Minnesota boxers an opportunity to fight in front of their hometown fans and to ensure the decisions were fair. The result of having no commission made Minnesota the laughing stock of the boxing community around the country. I was embarrassed to attend some events that were so inadequately matched, judged so poorly, that it resulted in head broadcasters giving our state a black eye, that still has a lasting effect on our fighters. To bring boxing back, I testified in front of many committees, lobbied legislators, spent many nights at the Capitol. It took the effort of many legislators and the governor, gave me $50,000 one-time appropriation. The commission was to be expected to be self-sufficient within a year. Just for perspective, the previous commission had a $90,000 annual budget. Approximately two-thirds of their budget went to staff, and the balance was paid out to the rent and equipment supplies and meeting expenses. When I was appointed executive director, the governor had to appoint five additional commissioners. Our former commission had seven. Each of them had extensive background, boxing background, and demonstrated a dedication and love for the sport. When our initial appointments were made in 2006, we did not have the extensive knowledge of sport and its events were carried out. While the appointees were good people, most were overwhelmed with the amount of work involved with the new agency and commission, which includes me. Many times I felt like I was trapped in a maze. I have found it very difficult to obtain direction and answers until we connected with the Department of Labor. In 2007, I went back to the legislature. It began with a testimony required in front of various committees and was determined by a boxing commission would oversee mixed martial arts and add four additional commissioners. I had the same motive for MMA community that I had originally for boxing. And since it was clear that many communities were considering it to be banned, I wanted to see this popular sport continue to offer participation for the fighters and wanting to fight in front of their hometown fans. MMA, commonly referred to as ultimate fighting or cage fighting, is the fastest growing sport in the United States. Its popularity has surpassed NASCAR. It is only in its infancy and reaches demographics that is untouched by other sports. The UFC Ultimate Fighting Championship is the largest league and represents the upper echelon of fighters, and this sport recently held an event in Ohio. Their commission realized over $100,000 in gate revenue for this event. The event sold out in a matter of hours. They had over 50 2,400 people at the weigh-in. At the weigh-in. I worked hard to secure our appropriations for 2008. Thanks to the additional $50,000 was secured for this year's activities. And we increased our license fees and commenced charging a $1,500 event fee. As a point of reference, these fees are higher than the norm around the country because we needed to raise revenues in an effort to be self-sufficient. It is important to mention we are very good stewards of our original $50,000. We ended up in 2007 with approximately $20,000 left in our two accounts. Unfortunately, no one explained to us that our 100 account would be reabsorbed into the state general fund because of biennial budget requirements. We were able to have these funds left in part because the commission's office does not pay rent because it was in my home. It has not had to purchase equipment because we have computers and fax machines and phones. Only minimal supplies had no utility, cost, or meeting place expense. The administrative help in the first year was volunteered by my wife or paid for from my personal funds. While we have a considerable increase in revenue generation, it is clear with the increase of responsibilities and events, we will not be able to sustain our commission without additional revenue. Last year we had 4 boxing shows. This year we have had 5, and MMA has had 8 shows to date. We have licensed 250 people in this sport, approximately 16 boxing. The total revenue received so far this fiscal year is over $26,000. And while there are substantial funds available,
just so I can clarify, you said MMA has had 8 shows to date. Is that this year in January or fiscal year from last June?
From July.
Okay,
on.
Thank you.
Yes.
I'm sorry to have interrupted you, but I just want eight and 14 days would have been. Yeah, we got an issue going on.
Well, we will have that money going on. We will have a considerable increase in our operating expenses for the balance of this year. As you may not be aware, we just received our appointments for the vacancies on the commission for MMA. We just got them in December. My wife and I were running the show. Our board has increased from 5 to 9. Our meeting expense has been 0 because they were volunteers and I had a place where I could have the meeting and the guy was in charge of it. And that was pretty impressive for us. Our event costs have been 0. With the senior commission, I am also going to burn through several $1,000s of our 200 account in order to fulfill the responsibilities of the commission with meetings and oversight at events. It costs us almost $1,000 per meeting with 9 commissioners. $1,000 per meeting with mileage and per diem. I cannot begin to express how grateful we are to have the help. We were anticipating ending the year with 15 events from the 1st of January until July 1st. We are surpassing that right now. With a new commission and a new agency, there is considerable learning curve. In addition, we need some new equipment and have added an administrative assistant in order to assist with the workload of additional oversight has created. Let me be clear. I'm considered a part-time employee. Since adding MMA, I have had few weeks that I have not required more than 29 hours that I'm supposed to work. Our administrative assistant is consistent. She's worked 17 to 22 hours per week, and my wife has volunteered anywhere from 20 to 40 hours per week as a volunteer. We will need to address the administrative needs of our event schedule continues to increase. Our licenses increase in number and renew. Our efforts to maintain safety of the combatants and the public continue to grow. This will require an additional revenue. funding will be required because the sports activity grows. The pressure on the commissioners will potentially result in serious pushback. Currently, we have four commissioners at each event. If we have, anticipated 35 to 40 events next year, each commissioner will be participating in over 19 events.
Hey, I have a quick question. Is there a requirement how many commissioners show up at each event?
Well, I said four or five earlier in the
statement. Yeah, I know you did. Is that a statutory requirement? Is that a boxing board requirement? Or
we need help. We need, you have to have a working guy working with the inspectors. You have to work with somebody has to watch the oversight of the payouts, and you have to make sure the rules are, you know, in place and being followed. We have to go and have an official in the back in the dressing room that works with the inspectors and make sure that they're all doing the right thing. And that's where it's at. It's really, it's same as boxing. It's the same. We, in the past, we had seven commissioners in Jimmy O'Hara. I mean, we had five or six commissioners at every event, and we were always working. We were always doing something. And so it's needed. It is needed. Those hours in conjunction with the busy meeting schedule will undoubtedly cause problems with their personal schedules and family responsibilities. I am anticipating the need to hire a person to fulfill the responsibilities that are needed at events. In addition, my wife has volunteered to perform tasks needed as an office administrator, yet the events coordinated all the licensing. That position needs an employee. She's got her own business and she's got to work in that. And, she's been helping me. But we didn't have any commissioners for MMA from July until December. And my wife and I ran every show. Yeah, like I said, every show. This brings us to addressing the immediate concern of revenue generation for this year's upcoming event. As you will note, there are some one-time expenses in not only this year's budget, but next year as well, with regard to rulemaking. We have, for boxing, encumbered $6,000 for rulemaking in the current year, but we are forecasting that the MMA rulemaking may require the state $20,000. And because of the contentiousness of this fragmented sport, currently 29 states have oversight, and that number is growing to meet the needs of MMA community. But it is not without difficulty. The states that we have spoken with attest to the difficulty of being consensus among its participants and outright defiance at regulation. In boxing, regulation has been the norm. In MMA, the sport is new, regulation is new, and the resistance is high. We need to anticipate substantial funding in order to establish rules necessary to support success and safety of its participants. In order to address revenues, we need to consider changing the current statute. First, I recommend that we change the event fee to include a percentage that may net less than the $1,500 minimum. That the small shows really need to be held. And you got much like the club shows, the club fighters. We had to have the small shows and get the fighters going, boxers going, so we could get to the big show. And I started out fighting in the convention center. I mean, it was a four-round fight. I got $100. I was really rich, But you had to go there and get to the Met Sports Center to raise that, those fans. And I think it's important that we recognize that the small shows have to be put together, and they can't be charged $1,500 an event fee as a percentage. So I'm advocating for this because we need to encourage small shows. Small shows will grow the sport. We are completing the convenience states that offer much lower licensing and event fees. With North Dakota offers, they'll put a 3% on an event fee, on an event, but they only charge $100 for a promoter's license, they only charge $20 for a fighter's license, and they're raising that MMA to the same level, $20, and it's just, you know, we're double that. So I think it's important that we have to recognize what we're competing against around the state. Now, Wisconsin, they have no oversight over MMA. And so we're getting several promoters that are going to Wisconsin because they can do what they want and not have to worry about rules. Small shows grow the sport, and we are competing with states that offer much lower licensing and events. One of the things wrong with boxing is that managers and promoters use their fighters as a meal ticket and don't allow them to fight competition that will improve their skills. I've witnessed the last 2 years a fighter that has done, he used to fight a bunch of stiffs, and now he has improved 200% because he's fighting people that he can compete against, and he has really improved. I won't mention his name, but he's really done well. I'm very impressed to see the combatants are willing to take on all competitions. I'm already seeing some of the combatants improve. The mixed martial arts guys are just, they're willing to take on anybody. They think they can win, and some, you know, they believe that, and their fights are very competitive. It's really interesting. I mean, gosh, you see upset after upset. It's just amazing. Currently, the minimum $1,500 rent fee, $400 for motor placement, $20,000 in insurance coverage per contestant. Paying judges, referees, purses, and their ability to profit is very risky. And while it is not responsibility, our responsibility to worry about their profit, it is a concern if it impairs the sport's growth. It is important that Minnesota be competitive in its fee structure, among other states. To that end, I am recommending that the legislature reduce the insurance requirement from $20,000 per contestant for hospitalization and death. We've done a survey. Most states only charge $10,000 per accident or for medical and for death. You know, we've done a survey in all the, you know, commissions, and they most of them pay $10,000. That is a substantial hike in insurance costs for the promoter. This is much more consistent with other states' mandates and will result in large savings for the promoter. It is noteworthy to add, very few injuries occur in this sport that require hospitalization. There is only been one death in the history of MMA. One death. Deaths in boxing are also quite infrequent, much less than in fishing, which is the most dangerous sport.
There's a lot more fishermen.
I'm thinking
that.
There's a lot more guys falling out of the boat.
It's that slippery bottom on the boat.
I always thought it's official.
I think it's entrapment. I'm not commenting.
To address the additional revenues, I'm also advocating the legislature approve adding a TV entertainment fee of some sort to work with our commission. I recommend it because the states that are currently assessing this fee are successfully funding their commission with revenue raised in this mechanism. Oklahoma's population is less than Minnesota, and while there are some demographic differences, they are successfully collecting $14,000 to $16,000 per month in Oklahoma for the pay-per-view buy in their state. be assessed a 4% fee for the buys to the MMA, boxing, wrestling, and other combative sports. We can anticipate being able to fund our commission fees if we assess a pay-per-view fee. I recommend that if we have that some sort of fee, that we go out and go with the pay-per-view. And that, you know, we don't know what the volume is exactly at this time, but I think that we have the volume number, but I think it's important that we look at our budget and see what our budget is and then assess that fee. And I just think it's important to keep us funded. You know, that's really big. If an event is held within the state borders, I recommend that we have a 1.5% fee for venues. That, you know, like let's say we have the UFC come in here. I don't want to have them pay a double tax. If they're going to pay a tax on their show, you think of what I just said to you. They had 19,800 in Columbus, Ohio. 19,800 people at the show. What I suggest is that we don't add a pay-per-view percentage for a 100-mile radius of the venue. You know, within 100 miles, they don't have to pay for the venue. You know, the 5 or 4 for the White Center, 1%, whatever it is. And I just think it's important. And that will bring UFC here and give us a real big program. And I've been talking with Mark Ratner right along. We've been emailing each other and discussing the issues. And he has questioned me about taxes and stuff. And he is very instrumental in helping me with this program. And we get UFC here, this will be a shot in the arm for this sport. It'll explode. And it's already exploding. We've got 10 or 11 events scheduled in the next 2 months. You know, 2.5 months, and that seems impressive.
Well, Mr. Ledoux, if I might ask, I'm looking at some of these other venues, and like Tennessee has a $58,000 a year annual budget, and a 4% state on boxing only, and I think it's prohibited in the MMA. And you can go through here and find dollar figures that are closer to what we're looking at under $100,000. And did you consider, and I'm trying to throw out ideas, I don't have any preconceived notion on what we should or shouldn't do here, but did you consider a small gate, percentage of the gate, and a small, because most of these other pay-per-view fees are 3-5%, you know, a 1 or 2%, a smaller pay-per-view fee, and have them both, so that both of them are very low.
Correct.
Yeah.
What we would like to do is get it a percentage to where it would meet our budget, and which our budget is probably $110,000 to $120,000. And that's what we would do. And that would, in our state, I'm told that we could do maybe a percent of 1% of pay-per-view or 1.5% to meet that budget.
Well, and I mean, what would the difference be if you didn't put that 100-mile radius in there?
Well,
you're charging everybody with it from point A onward.
What we're trying to do is get the UFC here, and they will, you know, they'll pay a fee, they'll pay a percentage of their gate. Let me think, if we get 19,000 people at the Target Center, what is the 1.5% of that volume?
I don't really know.
Well, it'll be a couple million dollars. It'll be a couple million dollars. That'll grow.
The gate will be about $2 million.
Yeah, their gate will be about $2 million.
1.5% of that would be $30,000.
Yeah, we're saying 5%.
5%
of the gate's revenue.
Okay. I would have. trying to figure out.
And that's why we don't need to charge a fee in the 100-mile radius of the event.
I don't have any preconceived notions, and I guess I'm not going to rule out that pay-per-view within the first 100 miles. And I don't want to limit ourselves.
Well, what we're trying to do is...
I understand what you're trying to do.
Trying to get them here,
right,
so they can spend $2 million downtown Minneapolis.
I fully understand. I really do. I understand that also we need to figure out to make sure that your budget is covered by everything. And, you know, we don't have... You've got to cover it the first couple of years. I'd rather see some way or another, if we're going to make all the cable networks jump through hoops, I'd rather them jump through hoops lower, because in the end, everybody complains about their cable bill. Frankly, I got more complaints about cable bills than I have about MMA. I don't think we're on tape, so I'm just trying to say what I could.
I got the tape recorder.
Oh, there you go. Now I'm in trouble.
I'll send it down to him. Okay.
Well, I think there's a lot of questions I have. The rest of the committee has to. We're going to have to learn more about that. Certainly, if we're going to ask, put a tax or charge cable TV for it, we got to make sure that there's a level playing field. We've got somebody from the cable industry here. Maybe we can say something later about it.
Okay. I just want to continue on here. I recommend that we institute the fee in the event that they have held the borders. I recommend 100 miles. We need this revenue source if we are to continue the commission's activities. Clearly, if we obtain the revenue source, we could reduce other license fees and make them more competitive with other states around us and nationwide. We are way above every other state. We are way above every other state for fees. And that's way above it. And I was told to try and make it, so we could be afford our own commission, but it's impossible at this point. We can be competitive on the current chart. That's a good justification of adding this viewer fee is this. Sports like football, basketball, hockey, and soccer grow their fan base through participation at public school level. This is, of course, taxpayer funded. As participants and their fans progress through the school system, some will excel and become college players and receive scholarships. Again, this taxpayer funded. A few of them will be exceptional enough to play professionally, where they have agents, leagues, team management that protect their image and communities, and state fighting for their presence because of income they generate. I submit that we are growing a ticket buying, hot dog eating, apparel buying, fans at elementary school level. When it comes to combative sports, these fans are being grown in small shows because they participate or have friends or family involved. This is not taxpayer funded. Not taxpayer funded. We grow the fan base for the big organizations that are capitalizing on the efforts of the commissions around the country. They are profiting in the billions because they pay per view attendance, audience. It seems logical to me that people who directly benefit from growing the fan base should have a direct responsibility for helping funding and the oversight that will help their business grow. Additionally, I am recommending amending the language to our statute to include oversight of professional wrestling, kickboxing, any full contact martial arts, Muay Thai, Karate, Taekwondo, and MMA. I recommend this for the safety of the participants. Safety of the participants. I went to one show prior to taking over MMA. And I sat next to a judge who was judging the fight. He was drinking at the ringside and was talking on his cell phone during the match. That has not happened on my watch. It was prior to my watch. And I told him flat out, you cannot do this. I mean, you're drinking at ringside. And without oversight, I don't want to see that happen. We may want to change our name of our commission so it can be more adequately describe our activity. Change it to the Minnesota Athletic Commission or Combative Sports Commission would be more accurate. Combative Sports. I realize the action regulation of combative sports is not without opposition. As I previously mentioned, the MMA community is resistant to the state's oversight. In your own body, there are people that oppose the state regulating combative sports. In fact, when we first gained the responsibility of MMA and did not have commissions to assist in oversight, my wife and I debated the pros and cons about not allowing any events to be held until we had a commission in place, which didn't happen from July until December. In retrospect, that would have been easier on me and my wife. This has been a tremendous amount of work to keep sport going until we had commissioners, and we continued at our own personal peril. Now, you have to decide if you're serious about regulation of these sports. I have enumerated some ways to fund the commission, but if you decide that you no longer want to regulate combative sports, you need to consider what you are going to do with them. I do not want to see the corruption of sports, which comes without supervision and oversight. I do not want to see the people hurt or public endangered or defrauded because of unscrupulous operators. In short, I do not want us to return to the days of no commission, because the result was not good for the state of Minnesota. I respectfully ask that you weigh all that I have said and that you will continue to support combative sports that oversight provides. I appreciate your time. Do you guys have any questions?
Any questions? It would be appreciated if we could get a copy of your remarks.
Okay.
And well, that allows us to have some of your recommendations and you know, my memory's short. I would appreciate it.
How many fights did you have?
Mostly an amateur and too many, obviously.
He lost all.
Who was the former boxing commissioner?
Jim O'Hara.
Jim O'Hara. I was on the committee when they ended the boxing commission, and it was due to the fact that most of the fights were Indian reservations in the state at the time. And the state of Iowa agreed to take over our responsibility of oversight of fights. However, I noticed on the list that Iowa doesn't have anything anymore, and I think that's why we got back and started again. It was always a welcome moment when Mr. O'Hara came, and he was a legend when he came here, and we all appreciated it very much. And it was with his agreement that we did end it. But I appreciated your testimony and spoken.
I served with Jim O'Hara 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
He was a fine man.
Yeah, I agree. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Keith Bogut. I'm an executive budget officer of the Department of Finance. And I guess I would like to start by asking the chair what you would like me to do. I have a handout. I can give you a handout of current budget for fiscal year 2018 revenue and expenditures. or we can sit right to questions, and I can talk to you about this here. To do testimony and find it from the commission. Whatever he can share.
Did the Department of Finance or anybody, because I really wasn't aware of it either, did you notify Mr. Legault before the fact or any of the Boston Commission that money was canceled for the general fund?
We did have a conversation, Mr. Chair, about that. I have no doubt that there was a lack of communication there. I think we had tried to encourage the commission to use that money to reimburse commission members for per diem and expenses that they hadn't claimed because of the budget situation. They had really watched the budget. There was $9,000 left at the end of my year. You know, we thought it could have been used for that, but I think it was just the timing and the way, you know, the fact that it was a new process. I don't think it was well understood, and the time just got away before that money.
Do you think that the Boxing Commission has gotten enough help so that they can take care of those kind of events in the future?
I think that under the current level of funding, $50,000 a year, I think is certainly inadequate for the commission to execute all of its statutory responsibilities. At $50,000, the commission can only afford to pay the executive director at 0.7 FTE the whole time. There's very little money available for support staff. There's no budget for rent, and as I said before, they only made it before because the commission members weren't being able to be in the right. In addition, there are other one-time expenses that I think we need to find so much fun. The MMA rulemaking certainly the largest one, and certainly tonight. The cost of that is difficult to address. At the current level of funding, no, I don't believe that the commission has enough funds to execute all of their
responsibilities. Chair? Rulemaking, is the rulemaking just dealing with what they can charge on the gate of entry, is that?
Mr. Chair, no. The rulemaking encompasses a much broader scope, and Mr. Ledoux could speak to it better than I, but if they have to adopt the boxing rules, and I think under the current effort to undertake the rulemaking process, they're only focusing on the boxing rules, and they are attempting to adopt the rules of the American Boxing Association again.
American Boxing.
Yes.
Does this apply to mixed martial arts?
It does not.
But they have many connections with mixed martial arts and divisions that are under them.
I don't know exactly what it encompasses, but it's, you know, what the fighters have to do, what the procedures are, how much oversight there has to be, deals with the referees, the medical checkups and stuff. I think very little is probably that.
Do you have a... Thank you, Chair. Do you have an estimation of what you're going to need to move forward as the commission? Am I looking at this year, or this looks like the $50,000 budget. Are there some recommendations that you're going to be able to present to us sometime, if not now, sometime during session?
Mr. Chairman, we had a meeting, the Department of Finance and the Boxing Commission had a meeting in late December and we sat down and went through all of their activities and tried to figure out what, how much money do they really need to address all the responsibilities. And the number we came up with, I believe, about $115,000 in annual ongoing repeating costs. And that gives them money to pay the director full-time position. It included money for some additional staffing to do some of the record keeping and stuff they have to do. It also included money to hire part-time event staff that would only work the night of a fight, and they would probably be there like 5 hours, and there would be four of these people, and they would show up at each fight. So I think annually that was $7,000 or $8,000. Not a big number, but I think that Mr. Lazuda had mentioned earlier that in the previous boxing board, the commissioners all showed up at fights and, you know, were part of the process. And I think that might not be, it might not work out that way this time. I don't know that the members that have been appointed to the commission are interested in doing that. I don't know. We're hoping that they do, but it seems to me that it was prudent to budget some money to have some people more knowledgeable about boxing knew the rules, and they could show up and make sure that things at ringside were being followed properly. And that reminds me, Mr. Chair, Ruffin and Gunther, you had asked if there was a statutory requirement that commission members had to be there, and the answer to that is yes. There's at least one commission member. That means you haven't had it on.
Thank you.
Did you figure rent for an office into their budget? Not that I don't like Mr. Rudy's house, it's just in the event that in 18 years when he decides after he's had enough of this and...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, that's a good point, and we share your concern about that. We have been working with the commission, and we have now, I think, have a process and a location in place to make public office the official residence of the Boxing Commission. And right now, that we intend that to be the Amateur Sport Commission in Blaine. And they seem to be agreeable to that. And the rent, yes, we are going to include some rent that we haven't, we don't know what that's going to be yet. We're working with the Department of Administration to negotiate something, but yes, it certainly is such.
Thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
May I just also mention, Mr. Mahoney, you asked about would we be presenting a recommendation or a budget. I just wanted to say that the administration is considering this as part of the governor's supplemental budget request. We are looking at the state for DC as a possibility. We haven't explored it in any great depth. Mr. LeBlanc has been surveying the state and collecting the information. We're going to go through that, and we expect to make some kind of a recommendation for the budget for the last commission discussion.
Thank you very much. That would be appreciated. We'll look forward to that timely report. Next on our agenda, we have Mark Roy. Welcome to the working group. Thank you.
Basically, we're here on behalf of Mr. and Mrs. Ledoux and the guys that are promoting the sport, like Nick is right behind us here. And
as we're taping this meeting, would you give your name for the record?
Oh, yeah. My name is Mark Royce. I'm an instructor at Midwest Martial Arts Institute of Burnsville.
And Jason Skatiak, I'm also an instructor at the same.
Thank you very much.
As I was saying, we're here on behalf of Mr. and Mrs. Ledoux on the Boxing and MMA Commission and the guys that are promoting the sport, Nick Dance, Brock Barton, and others that are following the rules. Basically, to see the commission go forward, I'd like to see the rules stay in place with some help. As you know, he was mentioning prices for the promoters. For the smaller shows, it's been very hard for them to be able to make a go of it because of the insurance requirements. And that's a big concern because, as Scott said, it's the fastest growing sport in the United States. In fact, it's the fastest growing sport in the world in every major country, in most major cities. And it's only going to grow more, but it needs help. So that's why we're here.
And I feel, you know, with these increased fees, obviously the promoter will be making, you know, less money. And we need to have these amateur fights at this level. They're basically a theater program. They get a fan break to face at a local level, which is going to give more exposure to the sport, which is obviously going to grow at a bigger level. And with these increased fees, it's going to make it tougher for the promoters to make money. They're going to want to cost crunch. They're going to want to cut fees, basically, so they can make their money, make a living at what they're doing. Therefore, one of the fees may be cutting the fighter's fees. I know we basically instruct the fighters out there. We're training them to get out there. These guys don't have a lot of money. To get into the sport, it's tough to get into. They have to pay fees for blood work, testing, and basically fees to become a fighter. So it's tough to get into the sport to begin with. So increased fees kind of have a trickle down effect all the way down to the fighter, and it's going to make the sport a little bit tougher to grow. This is the fastest growing sport right now in the United States, and we want to stay as a state. We want to you know, keep up with the Joneses here. We don't want to fall behind.
A couple of things. My biggest question to you gentlemen is there enough cohesiveness within the MMA and all of its affiliates? And I don't know all the acronyms and the people who might be invested or involved in the mixed martial arts. But is there enough cohesion to come up with a set of rules that, or a set of guidelines that you can follow so that you can come back next year so that the rulemaking process can be done? We at the legislature get a bad rap as to wanting to always put our will on people. And what we have found is when we ask, the people we ask, we're told we have to put some rules on, bring to us so that we can work with you. Is there enough cohesion in the sport to come up with a set of rules?
Well, rules, right now, there's enough opposition to people that don't want to see rules in place. We want to see the rules in place because it's about the safety for the fighters themselves. There are plenty of guys out there that would not like to see any rules. They'd rather just run their own shows and not have any oversight at all. And I think you're going to probably always have that to a point that will probably fade away as time goes on. This is new. The commission is completely new to the sport. I think the right people that are involved in the sport right now that are going to keep going forward, like I had mentioned some of the names that are here tonight, you'll see that. So, cohesion, yes. Just, I think with the right people there is.
I think it's still small enough right now. I mean, we can get a hold of that and create the right rules. The sport has not exploded that much in this community where, you know, it's out of control and you have, you know, 20 different promoters out there and 30 different martial arts schools where we're all trained to fight. So it hasn't gotten to that level yet. So I think we are catching it at the right time. And I think the community is small enough where we pretty much know all, you know, each other, where we can all get together and make it happen.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I know last year's regulating of the MMA and all its forms was done rather quickly as an alternative to a ban, which none of us, I think, not many of us wanted to do, but there was pressure to do that. So I'm glad to see that some of this is working out. And the nice part about that is that you came back and said, you know, you didn't do it exactly perfect, but you didn't do it really bad. So what I'm asking is at some point, for you to come back with some ideas for us, because I'm sure that we're gonna get more questions than we'll get answers tonight. So I appreciate you coming forward on this.
I appreciate you not banning the court.
And you know, one of our concerns too is we don't want you guys up there looking at it from the outside, restricting rules where at an amateur level we don't want to have to have them wear headgear and go through have to have a lot of restrictions on them in order to fight, because that's going to squash the sport. You know, just like at boxing at a local level, nobody's going to go pay some money to watch somebody go up there and basically spar. Okay? So that's one of our concerns.
One of the things that I did post on the website is the unified rules from Las Vegas, Nevada, New Jersey, and they are the ones that are predominantly accepted throughout the country. And if I'm not mistaken, is that true?
Yeah.
And they're predominantly accepted throughout the country in all the states that have MMA. Because Las Vegas is the mecca for UFC.
Over 300 fights.
Pardon?
Over 300 fights, according to the survey.
Well, yes, exactly.
According to the law that we passed last year requires tough person contest to be subject to the rules of the American Boxing Commission. That's the extent of the statutory requirement.
Is that appropriate?
They're not part of that, but yes, it is appropriate because
that's the law right now. That's the only thing that's in there.
Because it is the law, because it stopped the tough band shows from happening, because guys were going into the ring drunk. They were going into the ring drunk, and there were several people that had been killed throughout the country, and they would go up to a guy in the bar and say, you want to fight this guy? We have a guy that dropped out, and he says, oh yeah, I go there.
But this is only for tough man, it's not for me.
These guys, I'll tell you what, I am so impressed with the way these guys train and take care of themselves and come into the weigh-ins, and they're physical, they're unbelievable. They are warriors. They come to fight.
Mr. Chair, I've done a little bit for Mr. Royce and Mr. Skafiak and the other gentlemen coming up. As I just want to reiterate what Representative Mahoney said, because, you know, we had a lot of people there. Many people in the legislature there just wanted to think about nine other sports, ban tough man and martial arts and everything.
And if you were to ask me, they might want to ban something else.
We didn't want that at all, and I guess, you know, in our haste to try to get something so that didn't happen, and in our haste to save the ball, we kind of threw you all into the same mix. And, you know, I think a lot of us understood that we're going to have to come back and fix it, and I'm glad to see, you know, the information on how other states are funding their, whether they're regulating martial arts, tough man, or boxing itself, other funding. So, you know, I think some of this we could do legislatively this year as far as percentage of the gates, or, you know, undoing the $1,500 event fee and things like that. We don't have to wait for rules to be drafted. If we get the right laws, that's the good thing about being a legislator. We get the right
rules.
You know, and then we get the undo rules, but I hope we can give you the leeway to work with your different, whoever regulates, to work with those people and come back and have input then. With the Department of Labor and Industry, and come back. But I think as far as the actual fee assessment and the renaming, if we do with the commission, the amount of money to run it, I think maybe we can do something legislative with it.
I'd love to have your opinion about having other venues included into an overall broad organization such as professional wrestling and other venues. Do you think that's appropriate?
Within the mixed martial arts?
No,
within the overall
athletic commission, or what did you call it?
I call it combative sports.
I agree with that. I think that's
good. They all can be in.
Mr. Chair, and I, you know, it's good that we ask people what you think of that, but the people that we really need to be asking are the ones that are going to be flipped into that organization.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think we have to do that. Then when we're talking about a fee, you'll notice on your chart and other models that you can look at, like in hockey or whatever, when they write ranks between a small and big, is sometimes handled by having a small base and a percent. So, you know, that's how it's so that if you have a smaller fight, you know, it's probably going to go to the base and never get to collecting the percents and the higher totals, and then the percents change as the totals go higher. So there is models that we don't have a model here, but in hockey there's quite a few models in the state of Minnesota that do that. So that's good. And I agree, you guys train hard.
Any other questions? Anything you'd like to add? Thank you very much for your testimony. Nick,
sir.
Welcome. You are working with Nicholas
Gant. You guys said workshop. I thought we were going to clear all the pieces.
We had that before.
Well, I didn't really prepare anything. I just thought it would be pretty informal. It seemed pretty informal.
That sounds like a good planning.
Yeah. I guess I'd like to start off first by saying that you guys had a question about cohesiveness within the community, and I think right now, especially, there's an extreme amount of cohesiveness, even with the commission. I'd say 90% of our community is on the same page with each other and with the commission. I believe anybody who has been following the rules wants to see regulation in place. We definitely, and once again, I self-regulated my promotion for years. Not always saying that I did make mistakes, but it was a lot of extra work. And frankly, when you have to regulate yourself, you're going to make mistakes based on the fact that, you know, if, for instance, we've already had matches not come to fruition because maybe a doctor said absolutely not, or the commissioner said absolutely not, and this has come to us. It's fine. We can accept this, you know. We want to feel like what we're getting, what we're paying for, we're getting something in return. We're paying and we're being represented. Mr. Ledoux and myself have worked from day one. We haven't always agreed on everything, but we've worked, I think, tirelessly. He's worked tirelessly on making a lot of great strides in just 6 months. I mean, we went from, you know, the commission took over July 1st, and I had a show in August. I think the only way that was going to happen was for us to do a lot of work on the backside as far as getting fighter applications made up and rules in place. Apparently some of the rules that we came up with, I think the state gave us some guidelines to work with, but they gave us guidelines from states like Nevada and New Jersey, and while the rules from Nevada are great and represent what most of the country feels, we don't have 18,000 person venues filled up and getting, you know, free venues and free hotel rooms and lunch. You know, we're still kind of on mid-level. I've done about 140 shows In my 6 years of doing promoting, I've promoted from, you know, Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Minnesota. And I'd like to see this continue. I think that Minnesota, right now, we're a little behind the times. 6 years ago, we had the sport was exploding then. It took a step back due to a lot of promoters not doing what they were supposed to do. And it took a toll on fighters, it took a toll on fans, it took a toll on venues, sponsors, everything. I think you can talk to any promoter in here, and it is like pulling teeth trying to get sponsorship. Yet, you know, you have a snowmobile racing where they draw 1,000 people per day. You only got $50,000 for sponsorship. I can barely get a free meal out of Buffalo Wild Wings.
Might be to your better advantage.
I think when everything first started in July, the state had great intentions, the boxing commission had great intentions. I think they took our community as somewhat similar to what has happened to boxing in the past, where, you know, you have a lot of guys who are, you know, constantly I want to say break rules, but maybe bending the rules, always maybe kicking each other in the back a little bit. And we've had to protect each other for a long time because, like I said, in this business, it got pretty chaotic, pretty out of hand. We have had, I think, I want to say eight shows. I think I've done most of them. But we've had eight shows in 6 months that the commission's been in place, and I think that's a testament to what this community has put together and what the boxing commission has put together with very little help from the outside source. I'm not saying the state in particular, but it was, like you guys said, it was thrown together rather quickly. For whatever it is, they are just, you know, making sure that during that legislative session was taken care of. As far as the cost, it's really put a burden on us, some of the cost. I won't say that they're not, you know, they're out of line, because some of them are in line. I don't mind paying the $1,500 fee, but when the insurance that I'm paying is 50% of my net profit, you guys can see a problem with that, you know. And if it doesn't make sense, once again, I have had insurance since before the commission was in place, and I still have yet to have somebody claim my insurance. Now, I'm sure that it's going to happen, and it may happen on a grand scale, or of greater magnitude than maybe $10,000 or $20,000, and there's always exceptions to the rule. But I think overall, if we just protect the average fighter from the average injury, you know, that's kind of, and we're going by what other states recommend in the $10,000 policy, it's not putting us at a deficiency. I've lost money on, I think, almost 50% of my shows this year. Once again, being in business and having a new governing body, you go out and can be expected, but continuously month after month, if something isn't done, it is going to be really hard to run a mid-level show. And if you don't run the mid-level shows, big large-scale shows falter, like the Target Center show, that, you know, and poor management, of course. I am not opposed to having promoters' licenses being very high, so it's to make it so that promoters are responsible financially, and making it so that if you want to do this, it's like anything else. If you with the mortgage business now, it was very easy to get into, and you saw guys making a lot of mistakes and a lot of people having a lot of problems. The same could happen in this state with MMA because of. It is blowing up, like people say. If you allow just anybody to throw a show, obviously, there's a lot of room for error. Once again, I think that people, if they want to do this or something, they have to put their time in between. You know, myself, along with the commission, we've developed all the rules, we've developed all the forms, you know, kind of together. You know, us with the feedback on what works and what doesn't. Many of the costs, I think, that are associated with some of what Mr. Ledoux was talking about with the rules and scale and some of the licenses are going to be upfront costs. You know, to kind of go back to what I was saying before, this is a unique time in our sport and everything that we have going on with combat sports, because as the sport grows and as combat competition grows, you know, we need to nurture it. If we don't, then it gets out of control like it's done in the past. Minnesota is a really smart state. I was born and raised here. I consider the people that make laws for me smart, intelligent individuals. I always have. I think that our laws, as MMA is concerned, or that the commission is concerned, need to make sense. They need to be smart as well. I think we're moving in the right direction. Mr. Ledoux has been very open to a lot of our suggestions and is working hard to change some of the stuff, or he's starting to really notice what works and what doesn't. And that's, you know, kind of how this it just needed to be developed. We needed this time, and it's been rough at times, a rough go of it. It always is when something new comes about. But I think we're moving in the right direction. If we continue to have a little help from the state eventually, when we do bring the UFC here, and we do have, you know, if we have a 5% of a $2 million gate, you know, that's going to be close to our annual budget. You know, if they do one show, I mean, we talk about paying for the commission's annual budget with that one show, if we can nurture it. If the UFC doesn't come here, or we do not do shows on a grand scale with large revenue that gate, we're never going to generate enough money. I mean, because you can't, you know, you can't generate enough $1,500 shows to eventually pay for a commission, because on a low level, like my show system is, where I'm drawing 1,000 to 1,200 people, we can afford to pay those kind of prices. Once again, you know, 50% of my net revenue went to commission fees and insurance, mostly insurance. And I think, well, the other thing I wanted to talk about is maybe working with a scale system. You know, having smaller shows have different requirements than, say, a mid-level show and a large, you know, scale. So it's obviously different. Do I think it would be any problem for a large-scale show to have $20,000, $20,000 technical and death policy? No, not at all. I mean, in fact, they should, and they should reward that. The fighter, because you have a higher level of fighter, you have a higher level of competition. But to have a small show where you're 300 people will come to the show, I mean, you're talking about sometimes that's the gross revenue generated.
Can I interrupt you and ask, could you define a small, mid-level, and up and large show?
Well, you know what? I define it as this, as a couple hundred people would be a small scale show. In a bar that, let's say, it has 10 to 20,000 square feet, something bigger, maybe from 20,000 square feet to 75,000 square feet, audience is maybe 500 to 2,000 or 2,500 capacity, and then anything larger than 2,500, Target Center, XL, Roy Wilkins Auditorium. I mean, we don't have that many venues that I would consider large shows, but, you know, right along those lines.
And just interrupt one more time, I think the committee was supposed to go see one of these shows, weren't they?
I thought Rook of Vienna was going to work in
something. Who's that? Go on.
Where they gone?
He probably wouldn't get passed on the commissioners, but I appreciate that, because that is something that, you know, as we try to figure out the cost here, and, you know, accountants are really tough people to get by.
I would be more than happy to open up at least what we've done for the last 6 months and show you, you know, what my gate revenues are,
You know, I'm going to stop you there, because I think that would be proprietary information, okay. and I would prefer that you deal with one of the professionals at the state finance office, sure, so that they could make recommendations rather than put your business information out there, because once it comes here, it has to be a public record.
Sure, and once you, I'm just saying that merely because I'm just open to having this thing looked at.
You're pretty enthusiastic about making sure this thing works, and we're glad to see that.
Definitely. Well, like I said, you know, here's one of your own, born and raised here. I'm a businessman. I'm a father of four. I've worked hard my whole life, just like most of the people in the Midwest. And, you know, I'm just like you people. I'm just trying to succeed.
Representative
Roll. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Gant. I'm assuming Boodle is not your second name.
Yeah. Purely marketing. You know,
marketing, and you're a promoter.
Absolutely.
And how many, and we're going to hear from Mr. Larson, who's also a promoter, how many promoters of martial arts and stuff night competitions are there?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I'm of the opinion, and I hate to say this, but I really do not approve of tough night competitions at all. I don't think it's necessarily for competition. I think it's more for exhibition and a lousy exhibition at that. What we do is a sport, and it's a real sport. I'll also say that Brock Larson is first and foremost is a fighter, and he'll tell you that himself. And some of the things that he'll speak about are as a fighter and less of a promoter, because I know he's very passionate about the sport as a fighter rather than a promoter. What was your question?
My question was, how many promoters are there?
I believe there's probably about maybe five or six of us.
So that $400 fee that we put in there is only being paid by a few people.
Exactly. You know, and once again, I didn't have a problem paying it. I don't think anybody else does. I just think that the fee, when the fee first came out, I was thinking, why would they have a $1,500 per event fee? It would make more sense to do a $400 per event fee and a $1,500 promoter license, because once again, I just felt like I've always made myself responsible for the safety of the fighters, and less about, you know, filling my pockets up, and I think that's not always other people's opinion.
Well, Mr. Chair, you know, as you know, the chair of this working group, I'm sure we'll get some input, and I hope there's something, as I said before, that we can correct. And I think, you know, we're hearing you as far as the $1,500 event, which you obviously paid eight times on, which doesn't seem fair to me. And, you know, the insurance, I asked if it was a statutory requirement, because we never brought it up last year, but it was in law from prior years. So that $20,000 requirement has been in there previous, according to our legal staff, and so maybe we can take a look at that.
I think if you look at it, and I can't speak completely intelligently about this, but boxing, when you have injuries in boxing, generally you're talking about the head, and you're talking about a lot higher cost. Most of the injuries in the sport involve broken hands, maybe broken bones, which aren't, you know, really all that expensive to fix. I mean, to be honest, it's not like a head. You know, when you talk about a head, you're talking about a doctor that's three times as much money.
We know all about fixing heads.
But I just think that if you have to look at what's going on around the country, and does it make sense? If it does, I would live with it. And to answer your question about the $1,500 fee, I'm not even opposed to the $1,500 fee so much as I think you should look at a scale system. I mean, it's killing me, believe me, it's digging into my pocket, but if I have to do that to fund oversight so that we can actually have shows, then so be it.
One point I want to make is that sick runs and that art of the meds and stuff like that, when it goes from $20,000 per fighter for medical and $20,000 for death, and it goes down to $10,000, that's a $1,400 fee.
Yeah.
$1,400 in a small show of people. That's a big number.
That's about 25 to 35% of my net revenue.
Well, thank you for your input. For somebody who didn't prepare, you did a great task.
Well, all right, I love it.
Brock Larson.
He kind of stole my thunder a little bit.
Brock Larson. Thank you, guys.
Sure.
I'm mainly a fighter. I do promote some fights.
basically just kind of wanted to come and say that we, if it's possible, it would be nice to have a separate MMA commission, just a subcommittee or something where they can open their minds to the MMA rules and the fighters. And I've had 24 professional fights. I fought in Vegas, fought in California, fought in UFC, WC, Zupa, all the big organizations. And Minnesota is unique. We've had multiple UFC world champions. We've got multiple current contenders. We've had the first and only Ultimate Fighter on the Sports Illustrated cover, Sports Illustrated. We're kind of blessed there. So Minnesota is kind of unique in its own way because we got some of the best places in the world to train. That Minnesota Martial Arts Academy that had two UFC world champions that trained out of there. So it does make a lot of sense that Minnesota does kind of have a feeder program to the UFC. We've these guys that have made quite a bit of money off of the UFC as a whole, so it makes a lot of sense for us all to get together, you know, and get something done. And it's I threw a fight in August as well, right after Nick, so Nick got some of the lumps out of it for me. And but the news were great. I mean, I of course fighting, and I fought a couple weeks prior to promoting my show, which is a numbskull thing to do. Wasn't on top of everything, but they helped straighten me out and make sure everything was good. And they were real good to work for, and helped me out. And as far as the community, I think since the commission has been, I think we've all gotten all our ducks in a row a little bit, and kind of, you know, like Nick and I have even partnered up with a little bit, and making sure that where the fighters aren't fighting too much, making sure that everybody's taken care of, and knowing kind of everybody's pay scale is, and just kind of got a relationship more with each other than we ever have, just because, you know, we have to live with each other now. So I'm more of a northern guy. I'm Minnesota. I do have cage, or I go rent my cage. I go to Dakota. I've been to Michigan, to St. Marie. I've been down to Iowa. I've been everywhere, Chicago. My cage, and
did you bring it to the house floor someday?
Yeah, we can do that if we can get in the door. No, I just basically want to come here as a fighter and promoter too, and just say, you know, with I agree with the insurance should be lowered. I've had 24 fights. I've lost two. The most damage I ever had was a broken hand, which was very minimal, and a few stitches for a cut. So as far as, you know, injuries go, it just doesn't happen as much. You're not getting a heavy hit. Because anytime someone comes in to throw hard, you just take them down. There's a lot of little short hits, a lot more stuff, and a lot more submissions and stuff like that where people say uncle and that's over. And I think since the commission has taken over as well, I'm kind of blowing the loose horn a little bit. But since the last game, and we've had better officials, better reps, we have had better judges, just in all, and we don't have as many fly-by-nighters. I mean, there was a few Northern Minnesota programs that would have people come in, they throw a bunch of names on the poster. I've been on so many posters that I never even knew I was fighting. I get phone calls from my cousin saying, "You're fighting in Thief River?" No. Yeah, you know, so with that, I mean, we're not getting, I mean, Sean Church not on posters and trainers, which he was, you know, being able to play, but just saying it's helped a lot as far as making my shows better as well, because now people know that it's under the state, there ain't gonna be a line, no cheating, no nothing, everything's gonna be good to go. So I think it's helped people know that they're going to get a real product, they're going to get real fighters, they're not going to get these guys that just come out of the crowd or whatever. I think it's really helped, and I'm excited to see where the next year goes as far as a fighter and promoter. So just want to thank all you guys. And
thank you. Any questions? Well, I think, Mr. Chair, just for the record, Brock, you don't want to say on the tape that you threw a fight.
I think you held an event.
Right.
That's a good point. I started laughing.
Yeah, I didn't throw it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You feel better about that. Thank you very much.
That's all.
Thank you, guys. Mr. Grant? You were the one here last year, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's gone completely, isn't it?
Well, you're the one who kept us from banning.
I'm Andrew. I'm from the Minnesota Martial Arts Academy and the program director. And I guess I could address some of the questions here in the handout from Mr. Gilman. I would say that I think that it is important that there's a distinction between the professional and amateur levels of martial arts, and there's a couple ways that you guys could go about doing that. One way is to have the Minnesota Boxing Commission or Athletic Commission level become actually regulated at scaled fee structure. A second way of doing that would be to mandate that an independent sanctioning body be in charge of amateur mixed martial arts in the state of Minnesota, and that would have to be approved by the Boxing Commission. That would allow for a lot of promoters to do some of the smaller shows that you guys are talking about, to do amateur shows for a cheaper price under that system. You wouldn't have to pay the fighters, and that would help build a base level for the sport as well, and they can set different rules for the amateurs and the pros, which I think is another important thing. So that would be the way that I would answer that question.
How do you do it, Earl? What's the second question?
What's that?
How about the second question? If the working group supports continued regulation of mixed martial arts, how should that regulation regulatory activity be fighting?
If need be, I guess I'm this is wrong, I haven't had a chance to really look at this in depth, but I think it's important that the state is
some of the questions we would have to have answers for next time.
Okay.
And good that you hopefully you take this with you and discuss it with not just yourselves, but with a good number of others.
You have forgotten more about mixed martial arts than we know.
Well, I would like to see Minnesota just work lockstep with the other athletic commissions around the country. Most of them already do that, and I'd like to see our laws similar to what the other commissions have in place, and I think that will encourage some larger promotions to come here to this, come to our state, if we have those regulations right now. I know that they're thinking about coming here, but I'm sure they're a little bit tentative until they start. I would support lowering that tax or that statutory fee from $1,500 to a percentage of the gate, because I know that's how most other commission tax promoters as far as the pay-per-view. I may be way off base with this, but I believe they tax promoters if they sell their event on pay-per-view in that state. Like, I believe in Nevada, the UFC pays a tax in Nevada for the amount of money they make on pay-per-view shows around the country, and that helps fund Nevada state athletic commission. Some states also charge if people show a pay-per-view event and charge money to go see it at supporting a bar. Spectators to come watch something on closer to television. So that would be another way of doing it. I haven't heard that any state charge any kind of tax on spectators or people in their houses watching stuff on cable at all. I couldn't speak to that, but
I'm sure cable representatives might be able to.
Yeah, well, in any case, I guess, you know, taxing a promoter who shows on me the money that they make on selling something on TV, I wouldn't say that's necessarily a bad thing. And that might be one way to fund the box business. Although right now most of the smaller shows aren't obviously on paper either. That would only, you know, affect if these larger promotions do come to the state. And there are a lot. There are more promotions that just appear in that are going international and national and putting stuff on pay-per-view. So yeah, that's I'd like to see the commission more in line with what all the other states are doing as far as you know, fees and stuff. I think the fees for some of the fighters here are a little bit high if you compare them to the other states. The other license fees are about the same. I'd like to see a fighter fees lower a little bit. And that's pretty much all I'm saying.
One question, and it's a general question, and I'm not looking for an answer tonight. It sounds like most of you from the MMA side of that of sports are very supportive of what we've done so far, the small steps we've taken so far. One of the questions I have is, and again, it can be done answered at a different time, is the input that you got on the commissioners from the MMA side to the boxing commission. You know, did the governor's staff come and ask you to bring some names for it, or did they just present a dozen names and say, could you pick a few from here? I just would like to find that out because I think the infancy of the sport is, it's important to get people who understand the sport, are looking to get it to grow, and the people, you all seem very enthused about it. You're not going to pick somebody that you don't think is going to be enthused about the sport and put it onto the governor's short list. So I don't need that answer tonight, but it is something for a later time to have a discussion about.
I think they posted on their website the applications
right.
For month and month, and they reviewed those applications for quite a while and waited until they had enough people who had applied before they decided who they picked and leave.
Right.
He was asking
how you came up with the name of the
commissioner for mixed martial arts.
Because they had a martial arts background.
Correct. But I believe that the governor posted on the website accepting applications.
Yes.
And people applied for.
Yes.
And just because I don't think that your particular side of this business has a lot to do with the political world and regulatory world. Often, the people most involved with the sport try to find a few people that they think would be really a good fit and get them an application.
Yeah, although I think
you can take it from there.
I'll testify here on behalf of, you know, mixed martial arts. Are you happy with the commissioners I could put on the commission for your
part? We got a judge, you got a lawyer, we got some cool guys up there.
You know, Scott, we really don't know yet because they haven't done anything. They really haven't, you know,
in that time. So.
They went to the first show the other night, and most of them told me that they had never even been to a show. And once again, you can watch the sport as much as you want on television, but until you're there, you don't have the same. It's not the same. If you don't have the same grip on it, I think that you, unless you are there watching it, you're watching the fighters warm up, you're watching what goes on in their head with all their coaches, with all their teams.
Even taking it another level is the training them or being a fighter. You know, knowing it from that side is a whole different avenue also. I mean, you can watch it on TV like you said all you want. UFC is another level up from me.
Kind of like watching hockey on television. It's not the same.
My great analogy is I've flown on a lot of airplanes, but that doesn't make me a pilot.
Do you have anything else you want
to say? Just to elaborate on what Mr. Graham said, when we're talking about having the state come down with rules and regulations according to other states, I think what you need to say is other states that are like us, And what I mean by that is other states that are maybe Midwestern states, other states that have the same population size as we do. Once again, in Vegas, all their stuff is big, it's huge, just like the Las Vegas casinos. We want to be treated like Minnesota because we are Minnesotan, and we want to
be just so you folks understand, you know, we write statute, and then we have agencies like the Mr. Kowski back there, like the Farm Labor Industry, that are going to put out a public notice to draft rules, which oftentimes we all wonder who in the hell passed that dumb law. And, you know, if it ends up being a rule that was drafted by some department bureaucrat that thinks that's what we
not
want
John,
to pass the law.
Right.
So you have to be very involved when this starts happening, when the notices go out for the rulemaking process, so your input gets
put in. Absolutely. That's why we're here, and that's why we'll continue to be here.
Hey, Mr. Ledoux. One of the things that we did on our website, we adopted the unified rules, which are, you know, in how many states?
At least 20, I'd say.
So that's what we adopted, and that way we don't have to start making rules individually. We adopted those rules because they're nationwide in a lot of like 20 states.
You're speaking of the rules on fighting.
Yeah.
Right.
But Mr. Chair, Mr. Ledoux, and just for the audience, you know, these folks in the audience understand that the rulemaking process has a statutory thing they're supposed to hold to do. They'll take input, just make sure your input's there. Along that same note, Mr. Chair, please. And Beth, did any of you guys here today apply for the commission?
I did. Didn't work out.
Let's try to get on it.
There were people that we did recommend or try to, I guess, push through, but it didn't really work out. In fact, there isn't one single, and I'm going to put myself in the mix of all Minnesota MMA because I've been involved for a long time, whether a little bit or a lot. I don't know one single person on the commission. I don't know them. I mean,
welcome to the chair. Mr. Chair, Mr. Ledoux. So, then the legislation required a background in mixed martial arts, so.
Correct. Yes. They were all martial arts people, but they weren't MMA people. The only one person that was MMA was Gary Brittenall that got appointed. And that was the only MMA that got appointed. It said very broadly that mixed martial arts background. Well, you got Muay Thai, you got karate, you got all kinds of sport, and those are the ones that the forum had three of them had no clue about mixed martial arts. So one of them was a teacher, Chad. I believe he's a teacher up in Wilmer.
Okay.
But
I would speak a little bit about the kickboxing and stuff like that. I think that it is important that stuff is regulated, but there's no way that any of those sports can afford the fees that they would be charged under the boxing commission. So I would just like to reiterate that the distinction between amateur and pro should be need to be very clear, because most of those sports are going to be done at an amateur level. So if there was sort of that two-tier system between the amateur and the pros for the fees, that would be important.
Sounds like that has to be addressed right across the board.
Yeah.
Any other questions from the members? Thank you very much for your testimony. We have one other person who wants to testify. Mr. Freeman. Dave?
I'm not a boxer. I'm not a promoter. And I'm not from Minnesota. But I will tell you, I really, I live here now, and I love the state, and I love this sport. My 30-year-old son, Danny, was equated with Nick. And Nick's younger brother and him went to school together, even very high school. And Danny was telling me about this mixed martial arts. I didn't know what we were talking about a few years ago. Then my 13-year-old son asked me about it. He said, you know, you should be broadcasting that. I own an internet broadcasting company that's going to enter its fifth year. It's called NetJamsTV.com. And it started out with nothing. We now have the People Fight channel. And we've been broadcasting fights from the myth with Nick since August. It's a sport that is just growing by leaps and bounds, constantly. A friend of mine in Nebraska, she's 79 years old. She asked me once, how come you're not broadcasting that stuff? There's something to it. I had met Scott Ledoux a few years ago, and it was a great moment for me because I've been a fan of his for many years. When we first started to want to get into this, we met with a lot of people that I guess were called themselves promoters, and it scared the hell out of them. You'd ask them, who's your insurance carrier? Is there a doctor there? Who's in charge? We never really got any straight answers. We were lucky enough to come across some promoters that gave us great answers, and they told us that Scott was going to be the head of the commission. So I went and met with Scott out of respect, and I said, well, we're thinking about broadcasting this. How do you feel about that, and what can we do to help? I've not made one penny from it. All the bandwidth and all the expenses, whether it be video editing or services and streaming, we've not made a penny. But we're willing to sit there and make the investment because we believe in it. We're starting to work with promoters across the country, seven other ones, and it looks like Minnesota is the benchmark. People are saying it's a great commission, and it just does pay homage to the sport. I'm really impressed by the fighters that I have. I don't know much about the sport other than I enjoy it. They train really hard, and it's great to see a 13-year-old kid put the video game away and get excited about something. It's a good, clean sport. I brought my son to some of the fights at the Myth and a couple of his friends, and they can't talk enough about it. And I believe in it, and I'll probably never know much about it other than I enjoy it. And I truly believe that it's building an audience not only here in Minnesota, but worldwide. And that's where I'm here, and I'm glad that they let us do it, and I admire the work that all the promoters have done, and especially Scott and Carol have done a tremendous job. And yes, that's it. Just wanted to say that.
Any questions from Seth? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we've learned a lot. We haven't quite a few already yet. I think we have a lot of questions to ask, and you have a lot of work to do. We're going to discuss what we're going to have the next meeting, and we will let you all know about it.
And Mr. Chair, and again, we really like, you folks to be involved, and apologize for the extent that we couldn't get you as involved as, we were towards the end of the session. We were trying to, we thought help you out. Often we do things that are well-intentioned that turn out to be not so well-intentioned. So.
If the end result works, right? We're getting ready.
Okay.
Any other comments from the members? Mike Martin's with the cable network.
Media.
Mike Martin, I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Cable Communications Association. We're the trade group for cable companies in Minnesota. And I want to thank you for this opportunity. I know the hour's late, so I'll be very brief. I should point out we're a big fan. The Cable Association is a big fan of Scott. He was a speaker a couple of years ago, and no one goes to sleep when he's speaking. I want you to know that. It was a great time. I just want to make a couple comments about the pay-per-view fee. First of all, I'd like to point out that cable television services are extensively taxed in Minnesota. It's not an untapped revenue source. If you look closely at your cable bill, you see that you're taxed a Minnesota sales tax, which went into effect back in the early 80s. You pay a full sales tax rate on the total of the bill, all services are included. The language was revised a couple of years ago to make it more comprehensive, but it says basic, extended, premium, pay-per-view, digital, and music. So that there's no service that is not being taxed that you're getting on a cable. Also, Minnesota taxes satellite services in the same way, which is something we appreciate. We do on franchise fee, which is the next tax. Most cities impose a 5% franchise fee on the same services. It's basically a gross revenue tax, so all services that you're getting. And then there's also some other fees, there's tag fees. The average cable subscriber pays about 13% in tax on their service. So it is a tax service. Secondly, any new tax we would hope would apply to satellite as well. The satellite, the direct broadcast industry, direct TV, and Dish Network have exemptions, which they've gotten in federal law. Local governments cannot tax the satellite service. They can't tax the installation of the satellite service, and they can't tax the service other than a state imposed tax. So sales tax, Minnesota sales tax does apply to satellite service, but the franchise fees don't, so there is this disparity. Another point I'd like to make is that many of the states that were mentioned here do not tax cable. There is no general sales tax on cable. Michigan, for example, and Oklahoma were two states that were mentioned. There is no sales tax in those states on cable television. Now, they very well may tax a pay-per-view event or some subset of the service, but the fact is that generally sales tax is not applied to cable television. And if you look around the states, and I will spend more time on this and bring the more detailed information back, but that is the case in many states where there's a sales tax, but it may be on basic only. 21 states do not tax cable television at all. And then the states that do have a lot of, as you can imagine, there's a lot of variety. Some are as low as 2%, some are basic only. There's a great deal of difference. So there is, in some areas, I would say there is some flexibility there. But Minnesota is a state that has, for a long time, taxed cable services pretty aggressively, and against the whole service. So it becomes if you're hearing from constituents about cable rates and cable fees, and the cable bill starts to look like a telephone bill with a long list of serious fees, that is definitely a concern that we would have. But I just saw this chart tonight, and what I'd like to do is contact some of those states. I know this is an ongoing process, and I hope I have the opportunity to bring back some information on how those are administered. These kinds of events are regular events on cable. I think pay-per-view events are just about every month.
They're each month, and they incur boxing and MMA, wrestling. All those are pay-per-view.
There's quite a bit. I mean, it's very popular. Obviously, I have no idea what the take rate patterns are. Those are not available, but they certainly are popular events by the repeat. They're also carried as a regular network service by TV. Carries these events pretty regularly, so it does get a lot of exposure on cable. It's part of the lineup. It's certainly a popular service, and one we're glad to carry, and one that is taxed. When you sign up for a $45 pay-per-view, then all of those taxes will be
applied against that $45 where you are paying, the viewers are paying now extensively on the
I appreciate your testimony, Mr. James. Maybe you can have something you could add to this.
About what?
Late, about pay-per-view. Since you're kind of a promoter for things like this also, aren't you?
We plan on doing pay-per-view, and that's the reason why we're investing the time. And I hate to say it, four or five years ago, I was in Beijing on business, and I saw something very odd. People were standing around the storefront looking at a computer screen. That hadn't happened since 1948, so at that point, I kind of figured I was on the right track. I just think that it's an alternative, and I believe that the internet, is where it's going, and I believe that sport is perfect for the internet, it's perfect for cable, and perfect for satellite. I just think that it's exploding, and I believe that Minnesota has the strongest MMA community that I've seen. Because we're dealing with people from Jersey, from Texas, from San Diego, and there's something magical about it here.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think we'll look for the input from all sides. And
Martin, you may not know the answer to this, and if you don't, we'll have to have staff find out, but can we do could a pay-per-view on a computer be taxed? Because I thought the federal government said no tax.
I don't think you can. I think that all web services are exempt under the
there's a restriction. It's considered, because it's on the web, it's considered an information service and it's exempt from taxation. Just the way your monthly internet services are financed.
Thank you all for coming.